That should do it, Reacher said. I'll keep looking. There are hundreds of files, though. Don't feel like you have to stay. I'm weird. I like this kind of thing. Reacher stuck it out for another 10 minutes, then made his excuses and went back to room 18. He took a long shower, put his shirt and pants under his mattress, and got into bed. He listened to a few of his favorite songs in his head, counted to 3, and didn't drop right off to sleep. Something was bothering him. It was the damn flowers, he realized. The Edelweiss. Something about his memory of them still wasn't right. Reacher did finally get to sleep. He woke up again at 2:30 in the morning. Or more accurately, something woke him up, like a switch being thrown, from sound asleep to completely conscious in an instant, an instinctive response. Something had triggered a warning, a sound. He heard it again, something metallic. It was coming from the door, to the courtyard, not the next room. Someone was picking the lock, trying to get in. Reacher took one of the captured Berettas from under his pillow and moved it beneath the comforter. Then he lay completely still. The door opened a quarter of the way. A slim figure darted inside. The door eased back into place. Only one person had come through, small, wearing black, with a tactical backpack. Reacher. It was a woman's voice, and she was whispering. Reacher, are you in here? Please say you are, or I'm going to be mighty embarrassed. Fisher, Reacher said. Thank God. Your crappy old phone is hard to track. Walwart couldn't say for sure if you were here or next door. I'm here. Reacher sat up and switched on the bedside light. I'm supposed to be. It's my room. The question is, what are you doing here? There's a problem. I have new orders. The guy from Moscow is in the country already. He's ramping things up, going after the server even harder than before. That's not much of a surprise. No. But maybe this is. Going after the server means going after Rutherford. And since none of the Russians know where Rutherford is, the new man wants to flush him out by going after his mother. Reacher said nothing. You see the issue here, Fisher said. We can't do anything to protect her. If we did, the Russians would know there's a leak. And aside from what that would mean for me personally, as in a slow and agonizing death which I'd rather avoid, they would pull their agent out of Oak Ridge. We would never find out if they got a copy of the Sentinel. It would be a disaster all around. You have to do something, Reacher said. That's why I'm here. I'm assuming you know where Rutherford is. Let's say I do. Good. Then I need you to do 2 things. First, get Rutherford to make another copy of the server. Second, bring him to the diner opposite his building. I need him there at 6 a.m. with the server in a car parked outside. Any questions? You're resurrecting the original ambush idea? I'm adapting it. I know what the objective is now, and where it will be. But I have to truncate the timescale. I need it done and dusted, including Rutherford's apparent suicide before noon. That's still the Moscow guy's ETA in town. It won't work. It has to. Time will be tight, and it's not without risk, mainly for me. I have to go against orders, try to pass it off as initiative, combined with the desire to redeem myself in the eyes of my superiors. The fact that I will get the server this time ought to be enough to save my bacon. It better be. All Rutherford has to do is play along. He'll be fine. And it's better than the alternative. No, it's not possible. Rutherford's down with a migraine. He couldn't copy a shopping list, let alone a server. And he can't move. That's not funny, Reacher. Tell me you're joking. It's no joke. Then we're screwed. The whole operation's shot to hell. There's no way to save it. Don't panic. The fat lady's not singing yet. Let's say I have another way to get the copying done. How? Doesn't matter. There's no security risk. That's all you need to know. How will I get my hands on it? And make that look convincing? I'll give it to you, in place of Rutherford. Reacher, you already stopped a kidnapping by me and 5 other people. I couldn't grab you now with the three I have left. It wouldn't be believable. You're right. You couldn't take it from me. But you could buy it. How would you come to be selling it? Here's the story. It all began with the journalist. Convince your people I was working with her. She told me about the server. Not what was on it, specifically. Just that it was valuable. I came to town to get it from Rutherford because I'm greedy. I saved him from getting kidnapped. Buddied up to him until he let slip where it was. I stole it, thinking I could sell it to the newspaper. Only they hit me with a load of bull about being public-spirited and giving it to them for free. So I put it on the market, via the dark web, which you were monitoring because you're so thorough. We set up a meet at the diner because I insisted on a public place, at, say, 0800, 4 hours before the new guy shows his face. You're the hero, and he's on the next plane back to Moscow. I don't see it. Aside from foiling the last kidnap attempt, you left two of my men unconscious in a dumpster and attacked the rest of us with improvised chemical weapons. No one's going to believe you're a journalist's assistant. So, sprinkle in some of the truth. Say I'm a former soldier, now working as an occasional bodyguard. Say the journalist hired me to look after her in Nashville, where she was investigating those mob guys, the ones Klosterman warned her to stay away from. That could work, I guess. I might need to embellish it a little more. But it's the best we've got. So let's try to make it happen. You get to work on the copying. Walwork will call you at 0600 with a go, no go. Sounds good. See you at the diner, I hope. I hope so, too. Oh, and Reacher, one other thing. Before 0600, charge your damn phone. Fisher let herself out, then Reacher switched off the light and lay back down. He was annoyed with himself. He had just broken the soldier's most basic rule. Never volunteer. He should have known better. But on the other hand, what choice did he have? It was either go himself or leave Rutherford's mother in the firing line. He didn't know anything about her. Maybe she could handle herself. Maybe she was a former Marine, ready to teach this Moscow guy what happened to anyone who messed with her son. It was possible, but he didn't know. So the safest thing was to take care of business himself. Reacher turned the light back on, slid out of bed, and let himself into room 19 to search for the bag with the phone charger in it. He tried to be quiet, but Sands woke up anyway. He talked her through the developments, and she agreed to take care of copying the server. She made a start right away. Reacher figured that since he and Sands were both awake, he might as well make his way to the diner as soon as the server was ready. Then he changed his mind. Getting there ahead of time would be pointless. He had to go through with the exchange, come what may. Even if the Russians had replaced the entire waitstaff with paratroopers and locked all the customers in the basement, he still had to make sure they got the server. Otherwise, their attention would turn back to Rutherford's mother, the path he'd already ruled out. And there was another reason for playing it dumb. Fisher knew who he was, but the rest of her cell didn't. They needed to see a not very bright part-time bodyguard chasing an easy payday. Any hint that he was something different, and the whole house of cards could collapse. So he went back to bed, plugged in the phone, took three deep breaths, and fell back to sleep. Reacher opened his eyes 30 seconds before his phone rang. It was Walwork, checking in as agreed. "We're good to go," he said. "Fisher sold them on it. Should be a piece of cake. Better than the ambush in the end. Less complicated. No need for the fake suicide." "Okay. Let's keep radio silence from here on in, except for emergencies. I'll call you when it's done." Reacher hung up and swung his legs over the side of the bed just as Sands came through the connecting door. "How's Rusty?" Reacher said. "No change," she said. "He's totally out of it." But the good news is the copying went without a hitch. The clone is on the bed next to Rusty's laptop. "Thanks, Sarah. I appreciate it." "Don't thank me. Just be careful. Come back in one piece." Reacher paid a quick visit to the truck stop's main building after he left the motel. He wanted something to carry the server in for the last part of his journey, when he would be on foot. The best he could find was a giant tote bag. It was made of coarse, brightly striped nylon with fluorescent yellow handles. The luggage equivalent of hiding in plain sight, Reacher thought. He picked up a cup of the extra-strong trucker's coffee on his way out, continued to town, and parked four blocks behind Rutherford's building. Reacher timed his walk so that he arrived at the diner at 0802. He spotted one of the Russians on the street, acting like he was looking in a store window on the far side of the alley. Reacher pretended not to notice him and went inside. Four of the booths were occupied. Agent Fisher was in Reacher's favorite, the one midway along the right-hand wall, beneath the turquoise Chevrolet. Then there was the other female Russian agent, evidently recovered from her exposure to the chlorine, alone reading a magazine. A man in a suit, digging into a mound of scrambled eggs and bacon, and a group of three women. They looked very similar, with maybe 25 years between each one. Three generations of the same family, Reacher thought. Maybe in town for a reunion. Or a wedding. Reacher waited for Fisher to beckon to him, then took the seat opposite her in the booth. Reacher? She said. Reacher nodded. Dragon Tattoo 99? My screen name, Fisher said. Is that it? She pointed at Reacher's bag. As promised, Reacher said. All I need from you is the money. No problem. The money's in my car, out back. Come with me. Fisher started to pull a $10 bill from her purse. She paused when it was a quarter of the way out, making sure to keep her body between it and the Russian woman in the next booth. Three words were printed in the margin, in pencil. Ambush. Play along. She pulled the bill the rest of the way out and went to leave it on the table, but ended up dropping it in her water glass instead. Damn it. I'm so clumsy today. Give me 1 second. She grabbed a wad of napkins from the dispenser by the wall, fished out the bill, and dabbed at it until it was almost dry, and completely free of handwriting. Fisher led the way to the door that opened onto the alley. She pulled the handle, then stood aside to let Reacher go through. A vehicle was waiting, 3 yards away, a black Lincoln Town Car, the old square model. A retired limousine, Reacher thought, or a stolen one. A guy climbed out of the passenger seat. The specialist from Moscow, no doubt, arrived early. A huge slab of a man crammed into a black suit and tie, like an unfinished waxwork. He must have been 6'5", easily 300 pounds. His head was square, with sharp angles that were emphasized by his complete lack of hair. His ears were small, and they jutted out from his skull like they'd been stuck on as an afterthought. He had no eyebrows, bright blue eyes, a nose that had been broken a couple of times. A mouth that gaped open in a cruel smile, revealing several uneven brown teeth. Huge arms that hung straight down from his massive shoulders. And thighs that were wider than some people's waists. The primitive part of Reacher's brain took in all the subliminal cues. It assimilated them in an instant and flashed a warning in return. Amber, not red. The guy would present a challenge, it said. Significant. But not insurmountable. Normally, Reacher would be reassured by that kind of assessment. But he wasn't that day. Due to a 21st century reality that his ancient cortex was not wired to appreciate, this wasn't a fight to the death. It was a ploy. And it would only work if Reacher didn't blow his cover, which meant he couldn't kill anyone, or even seriously hurt them. Which turned the situation into a very big problem indeed, particularly if he was to avoid getting killed himself. The Russian Reacher had knocked out appeared in the mouth of the alley to his left. The guy he'd thrown through the Toyota's window appeared to his right. Fisher was behind him. He felt another presence join her, the other Russian woman. And straight ahead, the Moscow guy took a step closer. Reacher was surrounded. The Moscow guy took a key fob out of his pocket and clicked a button on its remote. The Lincoln's trunk lid slowly rose until it was vertical. The inside of the trunk was shiny. Someone had taped black trash bags over every surface. The guy put the key fob away and took a pistol out of his jacket pocket. A SOCOM Mark 23, developed from the Heckler & Koch USP for the U.S. Special Operations Command. Presumably sourced locally, rather than brought from Russia. A status symbol, in its way. Then the guy took out a suppressor and screwed it onto the end of the barrel. Unnecessary showboating, Reacher thought. He should have had his weapon ready ahead of time. Then Reacher realized the show wasn't for his benefit. It was for the agents. The new guy was making his mark. He was saying, "The problem you couldn't solve? It's easy to fix. It's done like this." It would have been a good demonstration if it weren't for the one mistake the guy made. He hadn't forced Reacher to put down the bag with the server in it, their big prize. That gave Reacher options. He could fling the bag high in the air and simply walk away while they scrambled to catch it and protect its contents. He could hold it in front of his chest as a shield, or threaten to smash it if they didn't back off and let him go. He could have done any of those things on a normal day, but not that day, because his need to get the server safely into their hands was at least as great as their own. The guys in the alley moved closer. The women pressed in tighter from behind. The Moscow guy gestured with his gun for Reacher to step forward. Reacher was running out of options. His brain was running through scenarios like slides in a magic lantern. He could see ways to escape. He could see ways to give them the server, but not a way to do both. And he was almost out of time. A second set of fingers closed around the bag's shiny handles, much smaller than Reacher's. Fisher stepped past him and ripped the bag out of his grip. She handed it to the Moscow guy, took his gun, and pointed it at Reacher's chest. "Into the trunk, numbnuts," she said, "or die right here in the alley." Reacher didn't move. His mind was racing. Had she played him all along? Or was she saving his life? Then the primitive part of his brain kicked back in, assessed the cues, and flashed its verdict. Green. No threat. Reacher stepped forward and stopped. There was another 21st century factor that his ancient cortex could not take into account. The trunk itself. The Lincoln was not a small car. Its trunk was a reasonable size. But Reacher wasn't. And he hated enclosed spaces. He always had. Some primeval aversion to being trapped. There was nothing he could do about it. So he moved to his right, along the side of the car, to the passenger door, opened it, and slid inside. Chapter 27. Reacher had spent plenty of time in places he didn't want to be, mostly during his army service. Places that were too hot, or too cold. Where everything that moved wanted to bite him, or where everyone he met wanted to kill him. But in those days he didn't have a choice about where he went. He was following orders. And at least he was getting paid. Reacher didn't want to be in the Lincoln. He wasn't getting paid. And he did have a choice. The Moscow guy had secured Reacher's wrists with plastic cuffs before firing up the engine. But that was no kind of an obstacle. It would be the easiest thing in the world for Reacher to wait until the car slowed at the mouth of the alley, open the door, step out, and walk away. It would be more satisfying to elbow the Moscow guy in the side of the head and then get out. But given the role he was supposed to be playing, a not very bright part-time bodyguard, a more prudent option would be to leap out and add a little drama to his performance, act panicked, zigzag down the sidewalk and dive into the nearest store, or dash headlong into the traffic. Reacher knew he could make it look convincing. He wasn't worried about that. He settled back in his seat. The car started to move. A few more seconds, he thought, a few more yards, and the game would be won. Reacher wasn't worried. Not until Fisher leaned forward and jammed the tip of the SOCOM's suppressor into the base of his skull. "I know what you're thinking," she said. Fisher's hand seemed to twitch slightly. Not enough to pull the gun away from Reacher's skin. Nothing that the other woman would notice from her spot at the other side of the back seat. Nothing that would catch the Moscow guy's attention. But enough for Reacher to feel the variation in pressure. three short jabs, a slight twitch, or an S in Morse code. "You're wondering if you could escape," she said. Her hand twitched again. One long push. A T. "Well, you can't," she said. A jab and a push. An A. "That would be a mistake," she said. A push, a jab, and two more pushes. A Y. "You could get hurt," she said. Four jabs. An H. "And there's no need anyway," she said. One jab. An E. "We just need to check that the server's the real deal," she said. A jab, a push, and two more jabs. An L. "That won't take long." "Then we'll give you your money," she said. A jab, two pushes, and another jab. A P. "And then, and this is the truth, you can go," she said. Reacher put the letters together. "Stay help." "Me?" he said. "I'm not going anywhere. Not without my money." The Moscow guy drove west for 8 miles. Not too fast, not too slow. And 12 minutes later, he pulled up outside the room farthest from the office at a motel that Reacher thought must be a similar vintage to his own. It had a similar mythical bird on its sign, lit up with neon. Similar wood cladding. The same selection of vending machines. A familiar rhythm of window and door, window and door. Only this place was built in a straight line, not around a courtyard. It had half the number of rooms. And when the Moscow guy led him into 18, Reacher saw there was already someone inside. A woman, in her late 30s. She was wearing a pale knee-length skirt, a peach-colored polo shirt with a logo. Her hair was cut in a neat bob. Her face was plain but earnest. She was sitting at a large wooden table with a laptop computer. A thick blue wire led to a 3-foot-high equipment cabinet with reinforced edges and heavy-duty casters, parked next to her chair. She was the Russians' version of Rusty Rutherford, Reacher figured, there to assess the server. And she was already in place. Reacher appreciated the efficiency. Beyond the woman at the table with her computer, Reacher could see that the space was much larger than his motel room. It was more like a suite. There were doors leading to a pair of bedrooms, a small kitchen, and a sitting area with a couch and a TV. The Moscow guy pushed Reacher a couple of yards farther forward. The other woman on the crew followed them in and continued to one of the bedrooms. Fisher came in last. She put the stripy bag containing the server on the table and pulled out another chair. Then she took Reacher by the arm and guided him to it. "Sit," she said, "and be careful. Don't break it." Reacher lowered himself down and Fisher took a length of paracord from the thigh pocket at the side of her pants. It was blue with red flecks. And narrow. Its diameter wasn't much greater than a decent bootlace. But Reacher knew the size was deceptive. It would be strong enough to take a regular person's weight in an emergency. He would have no chance of snapping it. Fisher used it to tie Reacher's right ankle to the leg of the chair. She bound it tight. There was no slack, no room to wriggle free, no way it could come undone. Fisher pulled out another piece of cord and tied Reacher's left ankle. Then she grabbed hold of the little finger on his right hand, pulled it to the side as far as it would go, took a folding knife out of her pocket, and extended its blade. "I'm going to cut this tie," she said, sliding the knife blade between Reacher's wrists and the plastic cuff. "Do anything stupid, and I'll break your finger." "I've already done something stupid," Reacher said. "I've come here with you." Fisher freed his wrists and tied them one by one low down to the chair's back legs. When she was done, she moved aside. The Moscow guy took her place. He checked the knots, each one in turn, carefully. And when he was satisfied, he turned to the woman at the table. The server was lined up next to her laptop, and another pair of cables snaked down from the back of it and into the portable cabinet. "How does it look?" he said. The woman nodded. "Genuine. No doubt about that." "Good. Call me the second you find the document, or when you're certain it's not there." Then he turned to Fisher. "And you? Watch, Mr. Reacher. Carefully. He and I will need to have a conversation, whatever the outcome." Fisher waited for the door to close behind the Moscow guy, then sat down next to the woman at the table. Reacher could see the laptop screen between their heads. It was like when Sands had searched the original server at their motel. A succession of images, presumably documents and records of various kinds. Reacher could see official-looking scrolls and seals on some, but others looked more like handwritten letters and notes. Most of the words were impossible to make out. They were too small, too spidery and intricate. And he was too far away. Though he doubted they would be any more interesting if they were legible. To him, anyway. The Russians clearly had a different reason for reading them. They didn't just want to confirm that the server was genuine. They wanted to know if the incriminating detail was there. If it wasn't, they were free and clear. There would be nothing that could help the FBI expose the spy. And they'd have no further use for Reacher. If it was there, though, that would be a different story. There would be a chance for Fisher to save the Sentinel. And then the question of copies would come into play. As in, had Reacher kept any? Which was presumably the reason the Moscow guy had changed the plan. Why he had wanted to bring Reacher to the motel. That. And his desire to stamp his authority on the team. Neither of which amounted to an attractive proposition from Reacher's point of view. Fisher kept up a constant stream of conversation. She talked about TV shows, movies, celebrity gossip. She was trying to bond with the computer woman, to appear friendly, non-threatening. Not the kind of person who needed to be kept in the dark. Not the kind who would steal a vital secret. The woman paid her no attention. She was too focused on her screen and her mouse. She had fallen into a steady rhythm. She clicked an entry on a list. An image opened. She studied it for about a second. Then she closed it. She clicked on the next entry, studied the image for a second, closed it. Clicked, studied, closed. On and on, over and over. The whole thing made Reacher simultaneously tense and bored. The other woman appeared in her bedroom doorway. She fetched a bottle of water from the fridge, crossed to the table, watched the images flicker across the screen for a couple of minutes, then went back to her room. The computer woman kept going like a robot. Click, study, close. Click, study, close. She went on for another 10 minutes, more than 500 documents. Fisher was still chatting away. Then the woman's pattern changed. She held one image open for 3 seconds. Then she checked 5 more, reverting to a 1-second interval for each. Time for a bathroom break. The computer woman closed the laptop, stood up, and headed for the second bedroom. Back in a minute. Fisher rested her head on the table and looked for all the world like she was about to fall asleep. But the moment the bedroom door closed, she sat back up, fully alert. She opened the laptop. A picture appeared on the screen. A church, all bright colors and twisty onion-shaped domes. It was clearly Russian. Reacher recognized it. The Church of the Savior on Spilled Blood. In St. Petersburg. Reacher had visited the city on a trip after the Soviet Union fell. He remembered it because it was the first major church to be designed from the outset for use with electric light. A box popped up in the center of the screen. There was a line of Cyrillic characters in a bar at the top. Reacher assumed it was asking for a password. Fisher typed something. Reacher couldn't tell what because each keystroke was represented by an asterisk. But whatever she entered, it worked. The church gave way to the list of files. Fisher used the mouse to select the entry 5 places above the one that was highlighted. An image appeared. Fisher pulled a small folding cell phone out of her pocket. She opened it and took 2 photographs of the screen. She closed the phone, closed the image, opened the entry that had been highlighted, closed it, closed the computer, then stepped across to Reacher. She pushed the phone into his pocket, followed it with a car key, and leaned in close to his ear. "Found it," she whispered. "There was a third brother. You have to get the picture to Wallwork. Wait till the tech comes back. Break free. Should be easy. I removed most of the screws. You'll have to knock us both out. Me first, so she sees. Sonia too, if she comes out. The car's parked out front. Chevy Malibu, white." Fisher gripped Reacher quickly on the shoulder and rushed back to the table. She rested her head on the surface. The technician came back from the bedroom, sat down, opened the laptop, entered her password, and resumed her routine. Open, study, close. Open, study, close. Reacher gave it 2 minutes. More than 100 extra documents. Then he leaned forward, lifting the chair legs and pivoting on the balls of his feet. He slammed back down. The chair disintegrated. Reacher wound up on the floor surrounded by fragments of wood. Some were smashed and shattered. Others were virtually intact. The upright sections of the legs were still attached to his wrists and ankles by the paracord. He ignored them and started for the door. Fisher blocked his path. The SOCOM was in her hand. The suppressor was still attached. Stop! Hands behind your head! Right now! Reacher glanced at the technician. She was still sitting, frozen, no sign of a weapon. He looked at the bedroom door. It was still closed. That simplified the geometry. He kicked the gun out of Fisher's hand, then moved half a step to his right so that his body was in a straight line between the two women. That way the technician could see him pull his arm back, wind up for a punch, launch his fist toward Fisher. But she couldn't see what kind of connection he made. All she saw was Fisher crash down to the side, hit the floor, and lie there totally inert. Reacher checked the bedroom door. It was still closed. He looked at the technician. Her training had finally kicked in. She was scrambling for her purse, trying to pull out her Glock. Reacher stepped across and hit her on the side of the head, left-handed. Not too hard. Enough to put her lights out. But not to cause lasting amnesia. Reacher retrieved the SOCOM from the floor. He looked at the bedroom door. The handle was turning. It was beginning to open. The muzzle of a Glock appeared in the gap, held in two hands, moving slowly forward. The woman was clearly cautious, which was fortunate. It kept her out of danger when Reacher fired two quick rounds into the doorframe. She ducked back inside the room and slammed the door. Reacher made for the exit. The shots hadn't made an excessive noise, thanks to the suppressor. Like someone whacking a table with a rolled-up magazine. But it was possible the sound had carried to the next room, maybe occupied by other members of the Russian crew, maybe by civilians. Either way, Reacher figured that the charade had gone on long enough. He went outside, identified the car, climbed in, started the engine, nudged the lever into drive, and pushed the gas pedal all the way to the floor. Reacher drove fast for half a mile, then pulled over to the side of the road. He slid the SOCOM under his seat and took out the phone Fisher had given him. He needed to call up the pictures she had taken and then send them to Wallwork. He hit the menu button, then closed the phone. Something was bothering him. Something about the situation was not right. He put the phone back in his pocket, pulled back onto the road, and continued, as fast as he dared, to the truck stop motel where he'd left Sands and Rutherford. The same time Reacher was approaching the truck stop, Speransky's secure phone was starting to ring. "The bait has been taken," the voice at the end of the line said. Speransky smiled to himself. "How soon will they bring her?" "I said the bait's been taken, not swallowed." She gave the phone to the drifter. He left with it. "But he hasn't sent the message." "Why not?" "I don't know. Maybe he's holding out for more money. Maybe he doesn't know how to work the phone. Maybe he got cold feet. We'll find out. And we're monitoring around the clock. The moment he sends it, you'll know." Reacher parked the Chevy outside room 18 and hurried inside. Sands was there. She was standing at the end of the second bed, eyes wide, feet shoulder-width apart, arms straight, holding her Colt in both hands. A classic shooter stance. The isosceles. Named for the triangle shape made by the back and the arms. A good stance for accuracy. Which could have been a problem for Reacher, given that Sands was aiming directly at his chest.
"Reacher!"
Sands lowered the gun and hurried toward him.
"Where have you been? I was worried sick. I kept calling and you didn't pick up."
"Long story," Reacher said. "Major developments. I'll explain everything, but right now I need your help." He pulled Fisher's phone out of his pocket. "There's a picture on here, of a document, from the server I gave the Russians. Fisher thinks it's the one with the spy's ID. She wants me to send it to Wallwork."
That's easy. Give me the phone. I'll do it now.
No. I think there's something wrong. I think Fisher is being set up.
Why?
A few reasons. Starting with the flowers. Klosterman's Edelweiss. They weren't there when Rusty and I went to his house. Then they were the next day, when he was meeting with the Nazis. Seems a little coincidental.
Not necessarily.
Could be lots of reasons for not having flowers every day. There's also the money. Why pay $15,000 for the server when Klosterman could just wait a week for the ransom to be paid and the digital archive to open up again? That's what a normal person would do. And why pay Tony Garza to go looking for the server the moment the ransomware attack happened? It's like he knows the archive won't be unlocked.
It won't be unlocked, according to Agent Fisher.
That's my point. How could Klosterman know that? Only the Russians know, because they're behind the attack.
But Klosterman is part of the Nazi group. You met them, saw their tattoos. They're organizing a rally. That's all for real.
The group's for real. The rally's for real. That doesn't mean Klosterman is. Those Nazis believe he's one of them. But that doesn't prove anything. They weren't the sharpest knives in the drawer. Klosterman could easily be a Russian. Discord and division. The core of their strategy. Boost rival groups and set them against one another. Breed violence and hate. But if Klosterman is a Russian, why was Fisher's team not pulled out when he got the server?
Here's the favorable explanation. They didn't believe me when I said it was the original. They were waiting to see if any other copies came to light, so they could mop them all up.
That makes sense. And what's the unfavorable version? Long story short, I wound up at the Russians' motel after I was at the diner. They had a computer expert there, ready to go. She homed in on this file right away. Even though the FBI guys haven't found it in, what, almost 48 hours. She knew what she was looking for. The FBI didn't.
Maybe.
But this expert, she practically signaled to Fisher that she found it. Then she left the room, making it mighty easy to get a copy. And as for my escape, I just strolled out of there.
So here's what I'm worried about.
They left her team in the field specifically so that Fisher would see the document.
They planted it? Why?
To misdirect the FBI. To protect their agent by setting up a second disposable asset to take the fall.
You know what that means. They know Fisher's a mole. They're playing her.
Reacher, the Bureau has to pull her out. If I'm right, yes. But we need to be sure. Can we see if the document Fisher found is on our server? If it isn't, we know it's a fake. And if it is, we can compare the two.
Theoretically. But there are thousands of documents. It could take weeks to find it. We need something to narrow it down.
Like what?
A file name would be great.
Where would we get that?
It would be in a bar at the top of the image, probably. Like a title. Here, give me the phone.
Sands looked at the screen, then shook her head.
The image is too small. And the phone's too basic to have email.
I'll text the image to my phone, then send it to the computer. Sands hit some keys on Fisher's phone, then some more keys on her own phone, then led the way through the connecting door to room 19. They found Rutherford standing next to his bed. He looked pale. His hair was a disaster, but he was upright, and that had to count as progress.
"What's happening?"
he said. Reacher brought Rutherford up to speed while Sands woke the laptop and retrieved the email she'd sent herself. The screen filled with the image of a form displayed on another computer screen. The picture was a little fuzzy, but it looked like the paper had originally been a very pale green, with some kind of large watermark at the center. A Greek key border in black around the edge. The official headings and boxes and instructions were also printed in black. So was a stamp saying draft. Then, back in 1949, someone had completed the necessary sections by hand, in flowing cursive, with royal blue ink. They had stated the address, which was familiar, and the names of the three owners. Artur Klich and Kamil Klich, the spy brothers. And Christian Klich, who must have been the third brother, whose identity had been kept secret, who Fisher thought was the link to the spy at Oak Ridge. "There, look," Sans said. She pointed to a strip of white text at the center of a blue band at the top of the image. "Scan 00001968.jpg. That's what we need." She typed on the keypad and clicked on the trackpad and entered the file name into a box that appeared. She hit the enter key, and a second later the screen filled with a clearer version of the same form. "Wait," Sans said. She pointed at the section of the form that listed the property owners. It looked like the same handwriting. It was the same color ink. It also gave three names: Arthur Klich, Kamil Klich, and Natalia Matusak. It isn't the same. And who's Natalia Matusak? Natalia Matusak is Henry Klosterman's mother, Reacher said. Heinrich Klosterman was her second husband. A dime gets a dollar. Her original name was Klich. The third agent wasn't another brother. It was her, Arthur and Kamil's sister. This document was a draft, Sans said. They destroyed it to keep Natalia's existence a secret. Or thought they had. But this is the original version. The one Fisher saw had been altered. How could they do that? Rutherford said. The server was never out of your sight, except when it was in the trunk. They must have gotten a copy of the document from the server we sold Klosterman. That would give them plenty of time to doctor it. Their expert loaded it while Fisher was tying me up. Then she made sure Fisher saw it, knowing she would pass it to the FBI, who would miss the connection to Klosterman, and jump to the wrong conclusion about the identity of the spy at Oak Ridge. How would that help them? If the third brother is made up, there can't be a trail leading to anyone. There absolutely can. The Russians will have planned for this. There'll be a perfect trail, complex enough to seem real, not so convoluted that the average agent couldn't follow. It'll lead to a patsy, someone sitting in Knoxville right now, probably with a copy of the Sentinel hidden in their shoe, waiting to run, and to get caught, and to confess. Why would anyone do that? They could think they're making a noble sacrifice for a worthwhile cause, or to get a big payday for their family back home, or to stay out of the gulag, who knows. But if the evidence is fake, how can the Bureau figure out the right identity? Rutherford said. They're back at square one. They're not, Reacher said. They can start with Klosterman. He mentioned having a son. He might have grandkids by now. The angle was never followed up because no one knew his mother was a spy. That makes sense, Sans said. The Bureau wanted the server because the Russians knew it could reveal the spy's identity. The link in that document is to Klosterman. So Klosterman must be linked to the spy. Not using the Klosterman name, obviously, Reacher said, or someone would have noticed. Maybe Matusak, since that's the name they were trying to hide. Okay, Rutherford said. I see that. But take a step back. The journalist found the document in the archives. The document showed there was an extra branch to the Spy Brothers family tree. The Russians didn't want anyone to know about that because it would lead to Klosterman and his son, and maybe grandchildren. So they destroy the physical archive, lock up the digital one, and get hold of the server, the wild card. Why not leave it at that? All their tracks were covered. Why set up Agent Fisher with this red herring ID? The FBI knew the Russians had a spy at Oak Ridge, Reacher said. If the Russians had destroyed the records and left it at that, the FBI would have kept on digging, maybe found some other clue. If the Russians' plan had worked, the FBI would have thought they'd caught the spy and stopped digging. There's no need to search for something you already have. Speransky was pacing around his living room when his secure phone rang again. "The bait has been swallowed," the voice at the end of the line said. "The message has been sent, but not to the Bureau itself. To a former agent who is now a cybersecurity expert. The Americans must believe it's genuine. So, Natasha, she's outlived her usefulness. The Center says you may do with her as you please." Reacher left Sands and Rutherford looking through other random records on the server and went next door to call Walwork. He told him Fisher's cover was blown, and about the two possible leads to Oak Ridge. One likely fake, one likely real. Walwork wasn't too worried about the difference. "We'll find them both," he said, "even if one's only a decoy, and we'll nail them both. Then pull Fisher out. Make sure she's safe." "No, Walwork," Reacher said. "You've got to pull her out right now."
"We can't do that.
If Fisher disappears right after seeing the records on the server, the Russians will be suspicious. They'll pull their agent out of Oak Ridge. We'll never know if the Sentinel is compromised. What we have to do is coordinate her exfiltration exactly with the arrests." "You're wrong. You're still looking at the mission from your original position, that Fisher's identity was unknown to the Russians, but they do know about her. They're using her as a conduit for misinformation, so they're not going to let her live until their patsy is arrested. Right now, Fisher believes what she sent is genuine. She was focused on finding it for months, so when it was dangled in front of her, she bit. It was a reflex. But when the heat of the moment has passed, and all the coincidences line up in her head, they won't run that risk. They'll kill her as soon as they're confident you've received her information. In other words, now. So you've got to act immediately." Walwork didn't reply right away. Reacher could hear him fiddling with a pen. He pictured the guy, the pieces falling into place in his head, him not liking the picture that was produced. "Okay," Walwork said after another minute. "You're probably right. We have a small window. But we're lucky, in a way, how things worked out, with her giving you the phone."
"How's that lucky?" Reacher said.
"I think you're right that they'll kill her as soon as they know her information has been sent. But how will they know it's been sent?"
"By monitoring her phone."
"Fisher wouldn't use a Russian-issue phone."
"Of course not. She procured a clean one, specially for the purpose. They'll have cloned it.
That's what I would do in their shoes.
It's easy.
And it will tell them the moment a message is sent, or a call is made.
But we don't have that problem. You didn't send me the picture, and you called me from your own phone."
"But a message was sent from her phone. Just now."
"Why? Who to?"
"We needed a file name to trace the original document, to compare. The picture was too small to read on the phone. We needed to see it on the computer."
There was another pause.
Reacher heard Walwork fiddling with his pen again. Then there was the sound of breaking glass.
"Well, congratulations, Reacher," Walwork said. "You just killed Margaret Fisher."
Sands drove Reacher to the Russian's motel. Walwork had warned him not to go. He promised to send in the cavalry himself. But then he mentioned procedures, levels of classification, clearance protocols. Reacher knew what words like those add up to. Delays. So he figured it was an outside chance, but if Fisher was still there and still alive, maybe he could do something more direct. Something that didn't involve warrants, or sign-offs, or permissions of any kind. All the cars had gone from the end section of the building. When they swung by, they could see the drapes in room 18 were open. No one was visible. So Sands stopped the Chevy right by the office door and went inside with Reacher. They went straight to the counter. A guy was sitting behind it, maybe 30 years old, with a plain baseball cap and a gray shirt with red piping and the name Chuck embroidered in an oval on his chest. Sands pulled out her worn black wallet.
"Federal agents," she said. "We're looking for the people who were renting room 18. Are they here?"
"They were," Chuck said. "The same group had 15, 16, and 17 as well. The four rooms all the way at the end. Anyway, they're gone now. They checked out a few minutes ago."
"Did they say where they were going?"
"No, ma'am. And one of them didn't seem well. One of the women, I think she was sick. Or drunk."
Fisher, Reacher thought. Drugged so that she would be easier to manipulate.
"Okay," Sands said. "Never mind. We'll need to see inside the rooms."
"No problem."
Chuck took four keys from a pegboard on the wall and set them on the counter.
"Just bring these back when you're done."
They started in 18, as that had been Fisher's room. Then they moved on to the others. The rooms were pristine. Reacher had checked into places that weren't as clean. Even the bullet holes he'd made in the bedroom doorframe had been spackled over. There was no trash. Nothing of any kind had been left behind. Not by accident. Not hidden by Fisher. Reacher looked under the mattresses and between the folded towels and inside the toilet paper rolls and in the cupboards and drawers and wardrobes. He tried everywhere he'd ever heard of anything being found in all his years in the military police. He even ran hot water in the basins in the bathrooms in case Fisher had left a message on any of the mirrors. He didn't find as much as a hair. Nada, Sans said as they finished up in 15. What now? Call Walwerk back, Reacher said. See if he has anything to add. They ducked into the office to drop the room keys on the way to the car, and Chuck beckoned them closer.
I was thinking, ma'am, he said. I don't know where those people went, but I know what they went to do. Would that help you at all?
It might, Sans said. What?
They went golfing.
Sans crossed her arms. Golfing? Are you sure?
Pretty sure. I heard two of them talking. They were speaking Russian. I know a little because my grandparents were from St. Petersburg. Anyway, one of the people used the word bunkere. It means bunker.
Where do you get bunkers?
Golf courses. There are a few around here. The second guy said something about it having been there forever, so it must be an old one.
Golf, Reacher said when they were back in the car. What an idiot. He was wrong about the golf, Sans said. That's for sure. But I think he just told us where the Russians took Fisher.
He did?
Where? When you were on the phone with Walwerk, Rusty and I pulled up some of the old records. We found a few for the lot next to the spy house. The Klich brothers bought it about the same time they bought the land for the house. They filed a bunch of construction permits, some more than once. And there were file notes about neighbors complaining about noise from excavators and cement trucks. Rusty thought that was weird, because the spy house is pretty much on its own. He said there was nothing built next to it. Not above ground, anyway. So I'm thinking, what kind of thing do you need excavators and lots of cement to make?
A bunker, Reacher said.
Right, Sans said. Only a Cold War bunker. Not one that's full of sand and golf balls.
Fisher thought the spy brothers did nothing while they were in Tennessee, Reacher said.
She was wrong. They supervised the building work. And when they left, their sister took over, Sans said. Klosterman's mom. They took her off the record so no one would make the connection. She married Heinrich Klosterman, and the house went in his name. Like money laundering, almost. Only with real estate. Then their son Henry took over when they died. Which is why he still lives there. You can't sell a house with a Cold War bunker in the backyard without raising a few eyebrows. Not that the bunker can be much use these days. Until now. Come on, we need to head over there and recce the place. We can make a start from here.
Sans picked up her phone and prodded and pinched at the screen until a satellite image of the spy house's yard was displayed. She zoomed in as close as she could, but there still wasn't much to see. Just an expanse of flat, scorched grass on the far side of a row of trees. The kind of field you might keep a donkey in if you didn't like it very much. There was only one other feature, a set of concrete steps. They were at the end of a dirt driveway and appeared to descend directly into the raw earth. There's not much to it. I thought there'd be hatchways and ventilation pipes and water tanks, things we could use to get in.
Reacher shook his head. It was built for people to shelter in after a nuclear war. Everything will be self-contained. The water, the air. It will all be treated and recirculated. By machines. Deep underground. There could be some kind of umbilical connection to the house, I guess. For power. Maybe water. To keep things ticking over during peacetime. Or for maintenance. But probably no other contact with the outside world at all.
We should let Walwerk know. He'll need explosives. Digging equipment, tunneling machines.
He will, if the place is locked down. I'll call him from the car, but then I want to see the place for myself. There's one thing that's on our side.
What?
They don't know we're coming.
Chapter 28
Sands stopped the car in front of Klosterman's gate. She looked at Reacher, crossed her fingers, then stretched out and hit the intercom button. There was no reply. Hope for the best. She tried again. Nothing happened. The gate was made of iron. It was 8 feet high. And it was the kind that slides to the side, so there are no hinges, no join in the center, no weak spots at all. So there was no chance of breaking it down, or forcing it open. If no one operated it for them, the only way through was to enter the correct access code. A 4-digit code has 10,000 permutations. They needed to narrow the odds. So Reacher climbed out and scooped up some dirt from the base of the wall. He ground it into fine powder between his finger and thumb, blew it very gently across the keypad, blew again to remove the excess, and saw that a tiny trace of dust had stuck to 3 of the keys, the 0, the 2, and the 4. Now there were 81 permutations. In Reacher's experience, people often used dates as code numbers. They're easy to remember, and they often have some kind of sentimental significance. In which case, the first digit would have to be 0. The second would have to be 2 or 4. And the final pair could not both be 0. Now he was down to 10 possibilities. Or possibly only 1. Reacher remembered the black Mercedes. The neighbor whose land was earmarked for the rally. Who believed that Klosterman was a fellow Nazi. Reacher entered 0420. Hitler's birthday. The gate started to move. Reacher jumped back into the car and Sands drove through. She headed away from the house, into the scrubby field, to the top of the steps they'd seen on the satellite image. 2 cars were already parked there, a black Lincoln Town Car, the one the Moscow guy had been driving, and another Chevy Malibu. This one was red. Sands stopped right next to it. Reacher got out and headed down the steps. There were 26, made of concrete, pale and flaky and pitted from age and the weather. A vertical drop of maybe 20 feet, leading to a metal door. Painted gray. It was dull, featureless, solid. Reacher pushed it with both hands. It didn't move. He leaned his shoulder against it, braced his feet on the bottom step, and shoved again. Harder. The door didn't give even a fraction of an inch. Reacher climbed back up and got into the car. Sands drove across and parked in front of the house. They crossed the porch, approached the door, and Reacher knocked. There was no response. He figured there was no point looking for a hidden key, so he landed a solid kick right below the handle. The door swung open, scattering pieces of frame across the tiled floor. Reacher crunched over them and turned to his right, alongside the staircase. Sands followed. There was a door at the far end. It led to a flight of stairs, heading down. They descended and came out into a basement. Reacher found the light switch. There were wooden shelves along the left-hand wall, stacked high with suitcases and cleaning supplies and all kinds of cardboard boxes and plastic tubs. There was a furnace on the right, along with a bunch of other air-handling equipment